Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Applied Human Design podcast. My name is Heather, and I will be your host for this little podcast. Today is fun. They're all fun. We're going to be talking about Uranus in astrology. We're going to talk about the mythology. We're going to talk about Uranus natally, maybe less so natally. Maybe focusing more on transit. But no, I feel like we will talk a little bit about it natally anyway. Either way, it's just going to be that's what we're talking about, right? Okay, so before we do that, before we get into the meat of the episode, why don't you go ahead and if you're listening on Spotify, scroll up to the top and hit that 5 stars. If this is your first time listening and you want to see if I deserve 5 stars first, that's fine. I respect that. But you know, if you've been listening for me for a while and you are on the Spotify app, go ahead and do it now. And then, you know, I'll wait. It's fine. I'm patient. And then when you're ready, you can come back and let's start chatting. So, as you would have heard in my previous episode, which has actually been like one of my most popular episodes, like in the last like 2 years, which is amazing. I think you guys must be sharing it and stuff like that. So that's awesome. I'm so happy that you guys are enjoying it. But I have been doing a like 21 day ritual, 21 day healing, 21 day practice, whatever we want to call it, in order to get prepared to prep the ground, to prep the soil for the Venus retrograde that we are getting closer and closer and closer to. So I guess I'm like, what date is it? It's the 13th. So I'm nearly 2 weeks, so nearly 14 days. Is that right? Yeah, I believe I'm at like 10 days, 10 or 11 days into this ritual, which is wild. just due to the amount of stuff that has come up, which I think just shows the power of like focusing on one specific area of your life or one specific like fragment of your heart or like one specific part of your soul that you need to retrieve, whichever way we look at it, for a set amount of time, even if that set amount of time is, sorry if there was just some extraneous noise, I was just picking up a spoon. Even if that like period of time is, you know, relatively like short, 21 days is a long time when you are devoting like 30 minutes, an hour, however long you can spare to almost like peeling back those layers deeper and deeper every morning. That's the thing, because it's like, obviously I started with one thing. And you know, again, I won't go into it too deeply because this is what I spoke a lot about in the last episode, but it's like you start with one thing and then you get to the bottom of that and you're like, that's interesting. Let's explore that. And also just naturally and organically through the process of you living your life through that 21 days or through however many days that you are focused and devoted on this specific area of life, you're going to notice different triggers, you're going to notice different issues, you're going to notice different patterns of yourself, especially because you're suddenly being conscious of it. They're going to come to the surface more, and that's going to give you even more places to dive in. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing. And this is kind of like what, as you know with me, I have ADHD, and I'm going to start about 20 different thoughts, and hopefully they all close and meet at the same place. It is my intention, but if I do have any thoughts that I don't loop back around on, I apologize, right? But anyway, so yesterday was the beginning of like the exact opposition of Uranus, so transiting Uranus, to my natal Moon Pluto conjunction. So if you don't speak astrology, that's okay. Basically what it means is that in my natal chart, in my birth chart, I have Pluto conjunct the moon, exactly 22 degrees of Scorpio. And yesterday, Uranus hit 22 degrees of Taurus, which means that, like in the sky right now, which is what I mean by transit, which means that Uranian energy is activating, is like infusing its energy in an opposition to almost like bring to the surface, and oppositions are quite like triggering as they are, let alone it being Uranus, as you'll see that we talk about the King of Chaos, the great liberator of Uranus today. You'll sort of get more of that planet's vibe, but yeah, kind of like bringing to the surface or like liberating a lot of the material that's repressed within the Moon-Pluto conjunction. And that is, you know, that specific conjunction has always been, I've always known that that is the most difficult part of my chart. And it is also exactly square my Chiron that I was talking about last week, which was what inspired this 21-day ritual preparing for Venus retrograde, because that Chiron is at 22 degrees of Leo, right? So natally I have Pluto and the Moon at 22 degrees of Scorpio squaring 22 degrees of Leo. So it's an exact square. And then by transit, that Uranus has now hit and is like that transiting Uranus is now forming a T-square, right? So that transiting Uranus is now like squaring exactly that Chiron at the same time that Venus is going to retrograde back and forth over it, yay, and kind of like the same period too, like same time period. And then it's also, of course, like opposite that Moon-Pluto. So again, if that means nothing to you, that's fine, but I just wanted to share that little bit of astrology so we can all sort of understand that, yeah, these transits, man, they do bring things to light. But anyway, so that being said, yesterday, being the great liberator opposing my Moon-Pluto conjunction, I was in tears basically the entire day. And I really do not want to call it tears. The better word or the better phrasing is salt cleansing, salt water cleansing. It just so happened to be coming from my eyeballs. What a gross word, sorry. And you know, from very deep parts of my heart, to be more specific. And I would not, and this is the thing with transits though, I mean, this is where it's like fate, fortune, do we have a choice, whatever. But anyway, I do not think I would have had such a beautiful soul cleansing day if I had not taken the choice, taken the conscious, made the conscious choice to sit down and do this 21-day Venus retrograde ritual to look at all the places that I closed myself off from love, and all of the things, all of the Venusian things. What has essentially, like, again, I will just like summarize this. I spoke about it a ton. Like, there's a 4-part post on my Instagram at Relentless Alignment if you want to read like the whole thing, and maybe we can like just do some commentary here actually. But a lot, well, there are two like major revelations or realizations that have come to the surface, and they both have the same like childhood root, which isn't that a surprise. It always comes back to mom or dad or whatever it is. Anyway, so a big one is realizing, and you know, as I've been leading myself through this process every morning, this in-depth like holistic counseling like process that I've been taking myself through, it's like the root cause of everything. And there's just like a little trigger warning here for the next like 2 minutes if you don't want to hear about like parental depression, parental suicide, all of that, then you can just skip the next couple of minutes. But yeah, sort of realizing that 99% of the action that I've ever taken is because I am scared, like in a you know, hiding way or in a protective sense, right? The protective armor that I wear is because my inner child is trying to prevent her mother from killing herself. And you know, the only reason that I can talk about this now and is because I've had a very, very good cry over the last 2 weeks. So hopefully I won't cry again. But, you know, I was the eldest child of a depressed mother. From the moment I was born until I was probably, I think she started to like, quote unquote, like get better or, you know, feel a bit more herself. when I was like, I want to say 15, 16. So when my younger sister was 10 and my like middle sister was 12. So they were still like relatively young, but I was a woman. I was like a young woman at 16. Technically, I was a young woman at 4 as soon as my sister came into the world and I realized that I would have to also be a surrogate mother. And, you know, like that is just to say that we often have these, especially eldest children, I think, and especially like little girls, like we take on these like mothering roles when we feel that our own mother cannot fulfill it herself. And I spoke a little bit about this, actually quite a lot about this in the Rory Gilmore case study episode. So obviously from a fictional perspective, but I think that doing that and noticing that also has helped me really realize like I do that, I was that. And just looking back at the pressure that I put on myself, but also that was put on me, as a literal child, right? As an 8-year-old, to keep the family together, right? And obviously it's like, I don't think there ever was a chance that my mum would end her own life, but I sort of took on the responsibility of like, as long as I can be happy, like as long as I can appear like everything is fine and nothing is wrong, then my mom will be happy and she'll be alive, right? Which, yes, like that's just inner child logic, right? It sounds silly. Like you do not have the power as an 11-year-old or a 2-year-old or whatever it is to prevent someone you love from hurting themselves. But we can internalize that. And anyway, all this is to say, I just think that's really fascinating for Pluto conjunct the moon, in Scorpio especially, but just Pluto conjunct the moon in general. And, you know, this is not to say, like, Pluto conjunct the moon is a really difficult and, like, repressed emotional placement in any natal chart. Obviously how that plays out, how that comes to life, the psychic damage that has left on you is going to be slightly different and very different for every different person, right? But it's just really interesting that if you take like the literal almost like representations, just like textbook representations of Pluto and the moon is the mother and Pluto is death. And that's all in my 8th house, also of like ancestrally inherited like fears and stuff like that. So it's very interesting to say the least. And yeah, the amount of like healing that I've done through that and just through being able to see like, okay, I don't have to live my life to protect my mother anymore. Because this is where I think like the Pluto on the moon prevents me from sharing with really anyone, right? Or like not being fine, right? Like just being open about like times when I'm maybe not happy or times when there are like things that I want or I want to talk about, or letting anyone see like my smile falter essentially. And why is that? It's like, you know, at the root, it's like, well, if my mom thinks I'm not happy, then she'll be sad and then I'll lose her, right? So again, it's funny, it's wild, but that has been a big one. And anyway, so bringing it back to Uranus, and we are going to get into the juice of the episode very soon. Bringing it back to Uranus, it's like, I feel like that opposition, and this is how I work with transits and how I view transits, is that like the building towards process. So with a planet like Uranus, that does take, you know, it takes like quite a slow-ish, you know, it's one of the outer planets, it takes a longer time, is that as it's like building towards the exact transit, right? So for the last like however many weeks, as it's been slowly edging closer and closer, or even the last few months, really, probably the last like 5 to 6 months, as it has been edging closer and closer towards that exact 22 degrees, and opposing that moon Pluto, the almost like the ground or the preparation or the effects were starting to come into my awareness, right? So it's often that building process towards a transit, especially when it's a tougher transit, like if we're looking at Saturn, if we're looking at Pluto, if we're looking at Uranus, any of these like tougher planets, tougher transits, but they can all be tough, they can all be fun, depending on, you know, what's going on. But anyway, as it's building towards it, you start to, I guess, like, it's like you know something's coming. It's like the anxiety of knowing something's coming, whether you're working with the astrology or not, right? You can feel like, okay, I feel like I'm building towards something. I feel like something, I need to be prepared for something. And that can be worse than knowing what you're working with, right? And so, yeah, throughout the last like 5 or 6 months, I've like, I know something's got to give. Like, I know how I'm feeling right now is not sustainable. I know this is not okay and all of this. And, you know, if you've been listening for the last, like, I guess since I like relaunched the podcast, like what, a couple of months ago now, is it? I don't know. 1 month, who knows? No, I feel like it's more than a month. It's probably like at least 2 months. But anyway, so you know that different things and different like, I guess like things have been really present, and it's like you're building. And then once you've reached the actual transit, like when you reach the exactness, that's almost like the climax, right? Like that's when like the firework goes off, the everything collapses maybe. But it's like you finally get clarity. And even though it can be like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do with this? At least you know what you're working with, because when the transit is like building towards, it's like, okay, I know there's something wrong, but I don't know what it is. And then when you get that clarity, you're like, okay, cool. Now I know, what I'm actually working with, and I can make a plan, and I can actually like take action, and I can change things, right? Because it's when we're unable to actually take action, when we feel powerless, that's when we're sad. To put it very bluntly, that's when life sucks. Okay, so the last little thing to talk about before we actually get into talking about Uranus, the man, the myth, the legend, is that in very exciting news, as a lot of you guys know that are either like follow me on Instagram or subscribe to my newsletter, a couple of months ago, I put together the Relentless Alignment Bundle. So making a bundle full of like both my foundational human design resources, so types, authorities, gates, channels, profiles, definition, I believe is in there. Just like, yeah, the foundational stuff that all of my students get, as preparation for our live classes where we go into like the application of that info. And then also in this Relentless Alignment Bundle, I put a bunch of my past masterclasses that and healing calls and, you know, resources and stuff like that that I have taught, led, etc. over the last, I guess, like 2 years or so of having the Relentless Alignment, like probably 2.5 years, whatever. Anyway. Of having that as my Instagram handle and I guess like a big frequency that I'm infusing into my business. Anyway, so what I've decided to do to make it more like affordable for you guys and, you know, something that also I get to continue like putting love and energy into is it's turning into a membership and it's now open and it is... what is it? It's at a founding mother's price of $33 a month. So if you're listening to that now or probably over the next like 2-ish to 3 months, then that price will be available and you'll like lock in $33 a month for the foreseeable future. And we will be having, so not only do you get like already like the 20 plus hours worth of like again, calls, masterclasses, resources, etc. that's in there. We're also going to have monthly community calls, and monthly like masterclasses and healing calls and all of that inside of the bundle. So it'll be one monthly thing for now, but depending on how I feel and, you know, just everything, that might turn into more. And I might like chuck other resources and stuff in there as we go. But yeah, so that is open and available now. We have our first community call on Monday. The theme is awakening the inner knight and really activating that safe masculine within. And The knight archetype is something that has come up in quite a few Akashic Records readings. It is an archetype that I have started working with to incredible like results and just sensations of safety for the last, like, again, 2 months or so that I've been really, really working on just trusting and feeling safer in my body, like actually trusting men and that. And, you know, this is like a double thing. It's like, how can your inner feminine possibly come alive if she does not feel protected? And as much as we would love, you know, all the men in the world to naturally be protective, and there are hundreds, thousands, millions that are, absolutely, it is not true for all of them. And we don't need to be relying on that, because we all have an inner masculine inside of us. And so activating that knight, right, whose literal role is to protect the feminine, and do what needs to be done to make sure she feels safe, so that you can, we can, I can soften and relax. And, you know, I've worked with many different healers over the last like three-ish years to try and drop some of the armor that I have, especially around like my relationships with men, especially around just softening into my feminine and just being able to walk down the street and feel safe, and not feel like I need to be like vigilant and on my guard all the time. And there is only one who has worked with developing me as my own protector first and primarily. And, you know, I think that it's just that I didn't work with her enough in order to get it to be sustainable, because, and everyone is different, right? I do not want to generalize how to do like divine feminine work at all, but for people who do have a lot of trauma, you know, especially around the masculine and men, finding that safety with my own inner masculine, which to me is represented by the knight archetype, maybe it's different for you, has been the only thing that has really like made this something that I feel like can stick. It's like when I've just done like the feminine work, I'm like prancing around my room for like a month at a time, but eventually, you know, something happens and I'm like, okay, but now I need to protect myself, you know? And so now it's like activating that thing inside of me, that divine protector inside of me. Even that just feels like so, so good to say, right? Has just meant that those times when I do want to soften, when I do just want to like be and be at ease and be peace and just like relax my jaw, relax my shoulders, I feel so much more able to do that, because I know I also have that inner protector. And so anyway, we have that first masterclass on Monday. It really is like perfect timing for just everything that's coming up with Venus retrograde and all of that. So I'm going to get really into the astrology of that as well in the call. And of course, if you miss it, then whenever you join the membership, you'll get access to the recording for that call, and you can do it in your own time, your own space, all of that. Okay, so is that all I want to talk about for now? I believe. Let's get into Uranus. All right, so let's start with the mythology. So interestingly, and I don't know if this is true for any other planets, I could be wrong, but for Uranus, there are two main like characters in mythology that are associated with the planet. So we're going to talk about both. Firstly, oh my God, and I meant to look up pronunciation for this. So if you speak Greek, if you are Greek, or probably many of those other like Southern European languages, I'm so sorry, but it is Uranus. Anyway, in Greek mythology, is the like Uranus like representative, I guess, like actual like mythology. And this being was basically like Sky Daddy. So Gaia, Mother Earth, is said to have sort of like inseminated herself, get it, girl, in whatever way, shape, or form, and given birth to the sky, right, to surround her. And that was Uranus. I'm just gonna say Uranus, just for the want of not doing that. You know, I'm currently in North Macedonia, and every time I try and pronounce a word, like I've learned a few like basic words like good morning, hello, all of that. They're just like, what? The Macedonian, Greek, these languages, it's like I can read them. It's really interesting the way that, like, even though it's like some odd shapes, well, odd to English letter speaker, and you know, that always makes me think of, like, if you've read the Percy Jackson series, how Percy, being like a half, like a demigod, right, is able to read the ancient Greek when his school class goes to monuments and stuff like that. So, you know, that is something that Percy Jackson and I have in common. I'm like, oh, that's that. Like, that's the pharmacy. And they're like, what? I'm like, can't you see? Like, that's clearly a P. or like on menus and stuff. But pronunciation, oof, no, no. Anyway, so back to our little story. Okay, so gave birth to Uranus, the sky daddy, right? And then these two mated, Gaia and Uranus. They were lovers. They came together and they gave birth to the Titans. The original, like, gods, six little boys, six little girls, and, you know, then we know the rest of the story. Well, not, like, we know, but, like, the rest of the story goes that it's, like, that, it's a really interesting, like, Greek mythology is a really interesting, like, commentary on, ancestral patterns, because Cronus, who kind of marked himself as the leader of the Titans, worked with Gaia to castrate Uranus so that Cronus could rise up and become, like, the king. So then you had, like, the time when the Titans were ruling. And so I believe it is through the castration, this is, you know, what a lot of the mythology says, that the bits were thrown into the ocean, and, like, that is what Aphrodite was kind of, like, born from, right? She emerged from the sea, foam, in Cyprus, where I've also been. So, you know, Aphrodite is much more ancient, even though she sits on the table with the gods, you know, with Zeus and, like, that fam, the next generation, which we'll get to. She is much more ancient, right? She, if we see it this way, then her mother is... her father is Uranus, the sky daddy, and I guess her mother is just, like, the ocean, or she essentially, like, gave birth to herself, right? She just emerged. She was like, I'm here now. Anyway, so that's where, like, the Aphrodite legends and myths stuff are really interesting, and, you know, it makes sense because Aphrodite is, like, that she has roots in many, many other pantheons, etc. Anyway, we don't want to get distracted. We don't want to talk too much about my girl. It's not her day, Aphrodite. I love you, but today we are speaking about potentially your dad, because there are other mythology that says that Aphrodite is the daughter of other folks. Anyway, okay, so that happens. And then obviously, like, later on, when Zeus, the youngest, I want to say, of the kiddos that Cronus has with Rhea. I can't believe I'm remembering all these names. Look at me. It does the same thing to his dad, right? Like, kills his dad and takes over. Is like, yo, I'm boss now. Anyway, so ancestral patterns there. And the interesting thing about Uranus, and I want to make a little bit of commentary here, is, like, in this mythology, so apparently after, I can't remember what time frame, but very, very quickly, like, all the cults for Uranus were eradicated, right? Like, it was not, like, eradicated, but they just, like, faded out. There wasn't a lot of worship past a certain time, and so we don't have a lot of stories. It was just, like, he just, like, faded away. But it's also interesting because, like, a great dad or a great, like, father in the sky, is that not what a lot of, like, monotheistic religions speak to as well? So, again, I don't know the answer here. Like, I don't know if Uranus was, you know, something that could even be comparable to our notion of God, like, the creator, but probably not, because I think, like, creation itself. Like, there's nothing in the Greek mythology that is like, you know, Uranus created everything. It was like, I think like for, like, obviously Gaia had a huge like creation role, and then also like there was chaos, Uranus, and there was a maybe mountains, if I'm getting this right, and from them then everything was created, right? So anyway, just really, really interesting. Okay, so there's that. That's one of the mythology. Now, what's really interesting is that, and maybe because we just don't know enough about that mythology to be even be able to make like associations with it in like modern astrology, psychological astrology, all the different ways that we love to use mythology in astrology today. We started associating Prometheus, which is one of the Titans, with the planet Uranus and how we interpret it, right? So this is to like in the field of astrology. And now the reason for this is, okay, and this was interesting. This was something I learned today, actually. I didn't know why. I knew that he was associated with the planet, but I didn't know like the origins of why that started. So Uranus was discovered, like the planet itself, right, was discovered around the Age of Enlightenment, right? The time when like discoveries and, you know, people were suddenly getting smart again after the Dark Ages, essentially. And we were learning, we were making advancements in science, technology, medicine, and it's like we were waking up from a great slumber, essentially, right? The Age of Enlightenment. Now, Prometheus, and it is often said with like the outer planets, so Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, especially, that the time when they were discovered, so the point in human history when they were discovered, is really, really important to a lot of the ways that we think about that planet, right? It's like we discovered them when humanity was ready for the energetic or the fragment of our psyche that they bring to life, that they represent. And so being discovered, right, around the Age of Enlightenment, Prometheus or Uranus was representing, again, the great liberator, right? The waking from the slumber, being alive and suddenly looking around you and being like, my God, I've not been like conscious or aware of anything that's been happening. And now here I am, right? Uranus is also associated with like invention and newness and inventiveness and innovation and thinking outside of the lines and being the rebel and all of that. And as we know through human design circuitry, you cannot have change, you cannot have liberation if you do not have people who are willing to go outside of what's been done before, right? So I think the Dark Ages was probably a time when there was a lot of like obviously rules and fear and restrictions in place to ensure that, not that people didn't step outside of what was the norm, but those that did were punished in, you know, some pretty awful ways. As I've seen in many past lives of clients being tortured just for thinking a little bit differently. Anyway, so there's that, right? So, and then Prometheus, right? So if we know mythology, I might have talked about this in the Chiron episodes, which is a long, long way back, but essentially Prometheus was a Titan, and he was said to have given fire, so enlightenment, right, light to the humans. And all of a sudden, instead of like just being solely dependent upon the gods to provide for them and to help them survive, humans had fire. They could begin to cook their own food and make things a bit like healthier and like safer. They could keep themselves warm through the winter. They just had fire. Like, think of all the things that fire has led to. And so we can view that as like literal like fire, or just like Prometheus gave them a spark that helped them move beyond just like worshipping the gods and feeling like the gods or the Titans at this time. No, it was actually the gods at this time, because Zeus was the boss in quotation marks, like relying on Zeus to and his pantheon to provide everything that we needed, essentially, right? So one day Zeus was like, man, I'm not getting as many like sacrifices as I used to, like what's going on, like where's my vibes? Because that is how the gods like feel sacrifice, feel offering, stuff like that. They feel it as like energy, right? It, again, it's like anything that we give attention to or we give like service to grows in energy, right? And Zeus was like, what is happening? And then someone was like, yeah, Prometheus gave him fire and they don't think they need us as much. And so as punishment for helping the humans, for enlightening someone else, Prometheus was tied to a rock on the top of a mountain and forced to, so he's immortal, right? He's a titan. Forced to have an eagle like eat his liver every day, and then it grow overnight and like grow back overnight, and then the next day have it happen again, till the end of time, essentially. Except it wasn't till the end of time, which we'll get to. But anyway, so so you can see how the like the comparison of Uranus, the planet being associated with the Age of Enlightenment and sudden waking up of humanity and creating new developments in science, technology, medicine, like this whole point in time, this like kind of like really quick, right? Because Uranus is, it's like speedy. It's like when it comes through, it's like, yeah, we're doing this now, right? Got associated with this planet and what it represents. It makes perfect sense. Another thing that I think is really, really interesting when we think about the Prometheus mythology and it being associated with the planet is that, so who eventually comes to like save Prometheus on the top of this mountain is Chiron. And again, I've done an entire 3-part series on Chiron, so you can scroll back and listen to that if you don't know about this like asteroid or like being in Greek mythology, both the mythology and the like thing in the asteroid, whatever it is in astrology, right? But I'm going to talk a little bit like later in this episode about Chiron's association with Uranus. But Chiron, once he was shot by Hercules' poison arrow, you know, his friend Hercules, it was an accident, so they say. No, I believe him. Chiron was wounded, but couldn't die, was immortal, and swapped places with Prometheus and agreed to take on Prometheus's curse or burden of having the liver eaten out every day by an eagle, and Prometheus was free. And Chiron in astrology really represents like our wounding. I've spoken about this before many times, so I won't go into it too deeply, but Chiron really represents like our deepest heart wound, right? The pain. And okay, how do I like piece these many thoughts together? Uranus, as we're going to talk about later, really represents a lot of like trauma that can come from being different, right? Being the outsider. This is what Prometheus's mythology represents. It's like, well, if you are the one who will go against the boss, the king, the ruling class or whatever it is to help out someone else, to, you know, help out someone who, yeah, or just to do something that the majority of society would not agree with, like the society that you come from, then you are the outsider and you are subject to the pain of being an outsider, right? You are isolated, you are banished to a mountain all alone. People do not like outsiders. As much as we pay lip service to, oh yeah, it's so cool when people are just like, go against the grain. When that's our friend, we're like, what are you doing? That's so weird, right? Like, be normal. Obviously not us here, but as a society, as a greater thing, right? So Prometheus, or in this case the planet Uranus, can really be seen to represent both individualism, right, and doing what goes against the grain, but also the trauma that's associated with that, the isolation and the pain that doesn't go away, like it grows back every day and then you're eaten at, and then, you know, it eats away at you every single day, just like the eagle with the liver. And it is only through Chiron, right, and integrating Chiron and letting the wound and the pain of being human almost like take over the disassociation and the need to be the outsider and the need to like not need anyone that really Uranus represents, And as soon as we soften into Chiron, and you know, that might sound a bit weird because Chiron doesn't always feel soft, but Chiron leads to softness because we're saying, okay, I'm hurt, I'm wounded, and that's still okay. Like, that's part of being human, right? So anyway, I think that's really interesting. And Chiron is the asteroid, like, so in the actual sky, like, Chiron is part of the asteroid belt that is between Saturn, or Cronus, and Uranus. And again, we'll talk a bit more, even more about how I view that association in a little. Okay. In terms of how Uranus, the planet, was named, this is also really interesting. Basically, so I feel like first it was named after the king at the time. I believe the British king, German, I don't know. Anyway, some royal at the time it was named after. And then it started, but then obviously like other countries were like, we don't want to call it that. Like, we don't want to name a new planet. Like, if you think about it, like, Saturn has been known thousands of years. This is the first, like, planet that they were like, oh my goodness, there's something else out there in thousands and thousands of years. And so other folks in the world are not going to be like, yeah, for sure, we'll name it after your king. No. So they just called it after the scientist who discovered it for a long time. And I do not know these names. I'm sorry. I did look at them, but I didn't note them down. And it's not important because obviously they've stopped. And then the logic was why they were going to call it Uranus, because they were like, all the other planets have like god names, right? Or like mythology names, you know, why would we just have one that's like randomly called Walchi? Or I'm sure that was not it, but it was something like that. Okay, so it was essentially like, okay, so Mercury, Venus, and Mars, so those like three planetary bodies that are not the sun, the moon, etc., and the earth, they are named after the sons and daughters of Zeus, or Jupiter. Okay, so Mercury, Hermes, so I'm just converting it to Greek mythology. Mercury, Hermes, Venus, Aphrodite, and Mars, Eris, right, are named after Zeus. Are the children of Jupiter, or Zeus. And then Zeus is the child of Saturn, or Cronus, right? So Saturn, Cronus. Cronus is the Greek, Saturn is the Roman. And then they were like, well, logically, let's just pop his dad on the end here. So that would have been Uranus, right? If you travel back to our mythology that we spoke about at the start of the class. So that is why they chose that specific name. Now, again, I like the association of Prometheus for the reasons given. I also really enjoy, you know, the genealogical ordering there. Okay, so now I want to look at the outer planets from the two directions. Okay, so I'm actually going to start, I think I'm going to start from Saturn and then move outwards, and then we'll look at it in reverse order, because that's really going to help us understand what Uranus represents. Okay, so stay with me. All right, so we start at Saturn. Okay, so Saturn is where we have society as a whole, right? We have governing bodies, we have the norm, and I'm looking at this from a, you know, a zoomed out perspective, right? We have what is the status quo. And then you have Uranus, right? You move into Uranus, and then you move into, and I'll come back to Uranus in a second, and then you move into Neptune, right? Which is almost like the infinite pit of nothingness and also everything, right? Where everyone comes from, that, like, you would think of it as that space in between lives, right? In between human incarnation, that is Neptune. And then Pluto, it's like even beyond that, right? It's the collective unconscious. It's like just nothingness. It's deep space. It's like what is beyond Neptune, just things we can't even like conceptualize, right? It's like the soul, or like the everything that's, again, beyond what humans can even like conceptualize, right? And then, so okay, what happens, like how do we possibly get from society, from being incarnate, from being part of a human world and like following it and abiding by the like kind of like modern dictates of whatever part of the world that we find ourselves in represented by Saturn, how do we get from that to Neptune, right? What happens in between? You know, how do we get from that to the Neptunian like oneness and, you know, bowl of soupy everything, okay? We have to individuate. And there is like, and especially this is why, like, I think looking at it in reverse order makes, and like looking at the outer planets in reverse order going inwards to Saturn makes this really, really clear and interesting, right? So let's say we start at Pluto and then we move into that time between lives, you know, so it's like Pluto, we're like a little soul, we're like, and we just, again, we're just blackness, we're in the void. And from that void, we say like, oh, I think I want to like take another life or something. Like, I think I want to like become a human again. So our little soul makes that decision. We move into Neptune. We move into this like soup of like everything. We're like, this is everything that ever has been, everything that could ever be. You know, you could see it as like the Akashic, however you want to view it. And we're like, you know, what does that want to look like? But we're still part of everything, right? We're still blurry. There's still like no secure like lines around where we end and the other person, the other people, the everything that is starts. And then we have to individuate. And that's the Uranus step, right? That is where we almost like experience the shock of moving from divine love and nothingness into human form in Saturn, right? Into human society in Saturn. We land in our bodies and we are like, oh my goodness, I was not ready for this. I was not prepared for this, right? There is a shock there. Like, that's one of the big reasons I think why Uranus really represents shock, because it's like, you know, like imagine that, like you are so deeply just like soft, nothing, gooey, infinity. And then you go and you're like, wait, why is this person telling me what to do? Like, why is this person telling me that I can't wear my hair like that, right? Why is that person telling me that I have to like raise my hand before I speak? What happens is Uranus. Uranus is a very, very traumatizing experience. And this is why I think it's really interesting to work with Chiron in between the Uranus and the Saturn, because the wound, the pain that comes from individuating and realizing, oh my God, this is not infinite love anymore, cuts so deep. And that's where the Chironic wound comes in. So we individuate in Uranus, we gain a deep, deep wound, like the existential wound of being human, in Chiron, and then we land in Saturnian bodies where someone else tells us what to do, essentially. When we view it this way, like Uranus is terrible, right? Like Uranus is all powerful, kind of steals us, even though yes, it's choice, but like takes us from that infinite bliss of Neptune so that we can more deeply incarnate, right? Or if we look at it from the opposite direction, we are taken from the, you know, and this is where, and looking at it from this next direction, right, from the moving forward direction, is more looking at it from the awakening, right, because Uranus is also called, like, the Great Awakener, the all-powerful, like, liberator, you know, that's also uncomfortable, as I know many of you know, and because that process is we are taken from the comfort of the known, we're taking from the comfort and the comfortable rules of Saturnian society, and we are moving towards spiritual bliss, right? We're moving towards oneness. We're moving more towards the soul, right? And those things that are existing in the Neptunian and Plutonian parts of us, you know, but in order to reach there, we have to have something that awakens that awareness of things beyond what we can see, right? So in order for us to touch the unknown, we have to have experiences that put us in touch with the unknown, and that is uncomfortable. Again, that is why Uranus is associated with shock, with chaos, with the unexpected, because it is often only these things, these experiences, that contribute to us waking up, to us looking around and saying like, oh my goodness, life is not what I thought, right? If you are just going through your day, your day-to-day basis, right? And this is for most people, right? Like, we know there's bliss in the everyday. We know there's bliss in the repetitive, like, you know, repetitive, like, experiences of being a human. But before you've had that first awakening and moment of clarity, that Uranian lightning bolt of, oh my God, there's more, right? If you are just like moving through your day in this kind of like humdrum experience of like, yeah, I wake up, I go to work, I come home, I go to sleep, I wake up, I go to work, I come home, I go to sleep, etc., day in and day out, then there is no awareness of anything beyond. But if you have something shocking happen to you, whether that be like losing a friend, whether that be your house catching on fire, whether that be, you know, really... like, I don't know, I'm thinking of like terrible things because, you know, Uranus is often like really shocking, scary things, but I don't know, maybe it's something really, really good too. Maybe you have like a health crisis, also not good. But yeah, whatever it is. And then it's like oftentimes those are what serve as the motivation for us to take a moment, look around, be like, oh my God, there's more than what I thought there was, right? Life is not just one infinite string of doing the same thing over and over again. There is so much more than I even thought there could be. That is the Uranian liberation into what comes next. And then if we think of Chiron in that direction, it also makes sense because it's often like something in our everyday life can trigger that Chironic wound, right? So we're just moving through our lives and then someone's like, oh, you know, like, you suck at this. And you're like, how dare you suggest that I'm not worthy of being incarnate in human form? That really hurts. And then we have these like shocking Uranian realizations of, oh, wow, like, you know, God is out there and source is real. And, you know, like there's more, there's things I can depend on. And, you know, I am worthy of love, right? That is a shocking realization in itself, just to like suddenly realize like, oh my goodness, I'm inherently worthy. Pain, right? Shock, all of these Uranian things and Chironic things. So either way you are heading, right? If you are heading from the infinite pool of nothingness into incarnation, there's shock. If you are heading from humdrum experience of being a human into total bliss of divine unity, oh my goodness, there is probably going to be shock, okay? So that is Uranus. That is what Uranus represents. That is why Uranus really is associated with shock. And, you know, there's so much more, but I think that is a really good and clear way to think about what Uranus is doing, right? Because at the end of the day, like with evolutionary astrology, right, we want to be putting a purpose behind the things that come up both in our psyche and in our lives. And we can take that perspective of everything is happening for me. So if these shocking, chaotic situations were happening for me, what are they trying to show me, right? What are they trying to lead me towards? Are they trying to lead me closer and closer to God, to source, to infinite divine nothingness and love, you know? It can also be like realizations, right? Like just like Uranus is definitely associated with like those divine shocking realizations. Like the one that I was speaking about at the top of this episode, right? When I said like realizing almost all of my actions have been to protect my mother, right? And keep her alive. And like that in itself is a Uranian experience, right? Of just like, it's like you picture like the lightning bolt of realization and truth, like flashing down into your head and waking you up from the slumber. All right, let me check my notes, what else I want to talk about. Okay, so Uranus in evolutionary astrology, and I sort of touched on this earlier, but let's just circle back. It's often associated with trauma in past lives, right? So if you are looking at a chart and you see Uranus in an important place, and if you've listened to my Goddess Asteroids episode, then you know that I sort of think of an important place in the chart as in conjunction or in like a close aspect to any of the personal planets or the angles. The angles are the ascendant, the descendant, the MC, and the IC, right? So if you have Uranus, and the closer it is, the more like I would look at that, right? And the reason that we associate, well, the reason that I think there are a few different reasons why different evolutionary astrologers look at it, but this is the way that I interpret it, is because of that disassociative piece of the trauma of being an outsider, right? Uranus in a past life reading is going to represent somewhere that we were the shock, somewhere that we were the innovator, somewhere that we were, like, we really represented something people were not expecting, something that people are not comfortable with. And like I said at the top, that comes with being thrown out of society, right? Losing friends, losing family, losing face, losing reputation. You know, think of just what happens now when people step outside or kind of like go against, you know, what most people believe, right? There really is, we really do, as a humanity, we like to, especially in the past, just have people be normal, right? Like, don't rock the status quo, right? As soon as you do, people are like, meh, that's a bit weird. Let's throw her out. Let's throw her out of the city gates. Dissenters will be punished, and dissenters will be punished by torture, by drowning, by burning, whatever it is, right? So Uranus, the witch wound, absolutely deeply connected, right? And this experience of being on the outskirts of society in some way, being thrown out of our family, being thrown out of our friendship, our marriage, right? Whoever decided that we were not good enough to be associated with them leaves a really, really deep pain. But it often looks like disassociation. It often shows up in this life as disassociation. So people will associate Neptune with dissociation, and I definitely do as well, but also Uranus, but more in that sense of like just feeling not human and kind of like separating yourself from other people and like othering yourself, right? Like, oh, they love that, they belong there, they do that, they can have that, but I cannot, because I am the outsider. I'm the rebel, I'm the one no one likes. And this is just simply not true, right? Like, you can be loved, you can find your home in people, even if you do not see things the way that most other people see things, right? There is a home for everyone. So if you are part of a society, a world, a town, and 99.9% of people, like excluding you, obviously, think that, you know, like believe something that you don't believe, right? And you like, I don't know, why is politics coming to mind? Like if everybody votes one way and you vote the other way, and you're like, oh my God, how can I possibly live in this like small town, like place, you know, like how I am the outsider. I am the rebel. I'm the one who doesn't fit. Okay. But you belong somewhere, right? There are your people out there, and disassociating and believing that you have to like think of the word disassociate, like associate means to like associate with people, right? To connect with people, right? And to like prevent yourself from that. Like you don't have to do that, right? You can still be like, you can still think things you think or believe the things you want to believe and still be loved. Maybe not by the people in your small town, but there are people in the world who will, you know, open, trust, and hold space for you. What are you doing? What are you gaining from staying in this place, right? Connection is more important and will do more than rebellion, I really do believe that in this life, like, we have had many lifetimes. Oof, this is, yeah, okay, this is really important. I feel like someone needs to hear this because I'm like, okay, I wasn't planning on talking about this, but we've had so many lifetimes where we were on the outskirts because we had to. But in this life, being on the outskirts and fighting against, like, fighting a losing battle, essentially, is not that beneficial. What's really going to change the world and us, right? We get to heal as starseeds, as witches, and we can heal by surrounding ourselves with people who, you know, not that like only see things exactly the way that we do, but love us for who we are, that we feel safe with, that we can connect with, that we don't have to fight against. That's not to say that there aren't a time and a place when we do have to speak up and we do have to, you know, kind of use that divine feminine rage power, right? That being a witch denotes us with and like just puts into us and is part of our responsibility, but it doesn't have to be our lifestyle anymore. And our nervous systems are not accustomed to that. Our nervous systems are accustomed to hiding, to being shunned, to being on the outside, right? To having all this Uranian trauma, but it can be different. We do not have to be the one voice against the many. We can be the many voices, and we can also spend as much time as we like healing by connecting to people who love us, who see us for who we are, healing by connecting to nature and communing with nature, right? And just a little, like, you know, those little like dandelion heads that you like make a wish on. One of them just flew past the window. That was so magical. And we're allowed that, right? It doesn't have to be such a fight anymore. We've been fighting for millennia, you guys. Like, the fight is, yeah, it can just be a bit softer. There's a time and a place. You don't need to be at it all the time. Okay, so yeah, so looking at your chart, you know, is there, or looking at a client's chart, right? Or friend, family, whoever, is that Uranus in a specific like area, right? So for me, I know I have Uranus exactly conjunct the MC. So representing that outsider in career and in just like everything. MC is just like me out in the world. So yeah, that's something that I'm definitely working through with this Venus retrograde, work that I'm doing as well. Just not having to be the outsider anymore. All right. Again, let me check my notes. I feel like I'm getting to the end of them now, which is good because it's been an hour. Okay. So yes, Uranus's association with electricity. Yeah, this is exciting. Exciting. You can tell I'm getting tired because my adjectives will just make no sense. Okay. Uranus is often associated with like, again, like I've sort of spoken about like lightning bolts, electricity, surges, right? If we think of like surprises, shocks, and electric shock, very, very Uranian, right? So we're thinking about the nervous system. Can your system hold the shock of like new frequencies coming in? So this is that more like spiritual awakening sort of side of Uranus. And that is why Uranian transits and, you know, if you have Uranus at important parts in your chart as well, nervous system work is so, so, so important, because you probably will have continual like shocks and like realizations and moments of chaos and all of that throughout your lifetime. And in order to move through that and to cope with that, you need to really focus on building a strong nervous system, because when you have a strong nervous system, it's like the most shocking thing could happen. You could be like, oh my goodness, my house is burnt down. And then you'd be like, okay. Like, okay, so what do I need to do, right? Obviously, you wouldn't like totally be like, okay. You'd be like, oh my God, this is so bad, but it's okay. My cat's safe. Our cat is fine in this situation, guys. Everybody, every living thing got out of that house, right? It's just the house that's burning down. And you're like, okay, what do I need to do? I need to call my insurance, right? That's the next step. I need to take me and my cat. I need to, you know, ask a friend because I'm feeling at peace and I'm not feeling like the outsider. And I trust that I can like ask people to help me out in this lifetime instead of feeling like I need to fight everyone and survive on my own and struggle and be the outsider, right? So then you're like, I call insurance and they want to help me because I'm deserving of receiving help. I call my friend and they want to help me because I'm deserving of receiving help and being accepted and connected. So you can see how Uranus, it's like, it's everything, okay? It's when you, and especially when it comes to like the spiritual awakening stuff, it's like when your system is not equipped to deal with and integrate as a human, right? As a human incarnate, the frequencies that are coming through, that is when you will disappear into madness. That is when you will lose grip on reality. And, you know, I've spoken some, a little bit about this happening to me. And, you know, by all means, I wasn't like the worst at it, but just especially when I could do an entire episode on this, so I won't go into it too much, but especially, in like the whole, like 2014 to like 2019, 2020 sort of time frame in spirituality, when it was all about like raising your frequency and all of that, it's like, okay, but if you don't integrate, if you don't ground that, if you don't also do the human stuff and the human work, then you will lose your grip on reality, right? If we cannot integrate the Chiron and the Uranus, then we lose ourselves in the Neptune. We literally disappear from being a human. And that does not feel good, right? That does not help anyone. And then you know, you've got so many people in the spiritual world and the spiritual industry. So I, you know, even though technically you could say I work in the spiritual industry, but I really try not to. I prefer to just call it like my work, not being my field, you know, that feels a bit better to me than industry. But yeah, so you have the like kind of like spiritual industry saying like, it's okay. Like, it's normal for you to like feel completely disassociated from everybody around you and the world around you and your entire life and your entire mind and your body. Like, it just means you're operating at a higher frequency. It's like, okay, that may be true. That may be true. There's no denying that, right? But if you cannot integrate those higher frequencies into your body and into your life, so much damage is done. And that's where you get like spiritual escapism. It's where you get like, and this is something that, oh my God, there are just so many, this is the same as like last week's episode. There are so many different rabbit holes we could go down, but I'm gonna try and like close everything up pretty soon. But so I've been working with Circe in my journeying lately, and I have done one Instagram post on this, and it's something I could definitely talk about more if you guys are interested. But Circe being like the witch, and she's really interesting for Uranus as well, right? Because she was a witch who was banished for being different than her family. They couldn't stand the look of her. They couldn't stand the smell of her. So they sent her to an island. She is a witch who, she does a lot of like protective magic, and that protective magic would look like turning men who wished her harm into pigs. And, you know, I've been sort of like working with her as this messenger that like the dark arts in the way that some people think about it, right? It's like when we get into witchcraft, when we get into intuitive work, we can think that curses, hexes, that like, again, darker side of witchcraft is bad. But, and you know, I've had like a healer say this to me before, and then hearing like Circe echo it, I was like, oof, this is so, so true. It's like, if you like, okay, let's say like you have an ex, or you have someone who was abusive to you, and you know, the law has not taken care of it, and this person is genuinely dangerous, you know, they're still dangerous. Can you not see how not doing a binding spell or not like using your powers in some way to prevent them from doing more harm is like doing more damage, is like darker than like doing it, right? And this is where like, yeah, the ethics of witchcraft, really you have to like work on it for yourself, because this, and you know, I have book recommendations as well that I can share with you, because I'm not like an expert in this. This is something that I'm like trying to integrate and work with in my own practice as well. But you know, this was part of Cersei's message, is that like any spiritual community where, you know, darkness and like using your powers in a way that's not totally like love and light and all of that, they are keeping us from our real work. You know, back in the day, back in the olden times, the witches would exert power over politicians who had gotten too greedy, right? Like, I have past lives of doing this. You know, if we've got to do what we have to do to protect ourselves and to protect other people. That is part of our responsibility as witches. There is darkness in the world. It does exist. And anyone, any place that is denying it is not a safe place. Because if you are not working with a teacher, a healer, a mentor, whoever it is, who believes in the dark, then how are they going to protect you from it, right? So, on that very unrelated note, yeah, and then like circling it back to Cersei, it's like, okay, well, she knew that like she has power. She has power to protect herself. And she was named, like, she was like, oh, she's like a dark witch, right? And people were scared of her and all of that. It's like, no, it's just because she was using her power to protect herself. And like, who knows how many other countless wounds she's protected by turning these men into pigs, right? So they can't cause harm. That's incredible, right? Like that right there, right? That's my girl. Love her. Okay, so let me check my notes for the last time. Yeah. Okay, final parting thought. Uranus and transits especially, they're nothing to be afraid of. Don't be scared, right? You've got this. You, like, if you are also, I know a lot of you, because like attracts like and all of that, I know a lot of you also have a ton of planets in Scorpio, so you're also experiencing Uranian oppositions right now. If you have Taurus placements, Leo or Aquarius, right, any of those fixed signs, you're getting the brunt of the Uranian activation at the moment. It's nothing to be worried about. Hopefully that's what this episode has instilled in you, like, you can handle anything that comes up. Learn to protect yourself, learn to ask for help when you need it, integrate back into society, into the world, integrate into love, and the places that feel deeply loving and nourishing for you. You don't have to be the outsider. You don't always have to be the outsider. I don't know how many times I can say that. Give your nervous system the support that it needs to integrate. And also, like, if it is more like spiritual activations that are coming through, then, sorry, I'm getting distracted because now I can sense Cersei's presence here. Okay, if it is like spiritual activations that are coming through, then work on that grounding, work on that human peace, work on actually like healing, like bring in the Chiron side of things, the deep heart healing. Because again, that is the connecting piece between the Saturnian, right? The incarnate, the human, and the Uranian, like shock, chaos, liberation from all of that. The society and the individual, right? In between that comes healing, like healing the wound of separation. Okay, so that's everything. Lots of love. Thanks for listening. Hope you are having a good day, good weekend, good experience of life wherever you are. And I'm sure I'll talk to you very soon. Okay, bye.